Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
We're in the middle of Passover. For Jews, it commemorates a story of liberation, specifically the liberation of the ancient Hebrews from enslavement in Egypt. This is an intensely religious time of year for Jews and Muslims, and many members of both faiths this year are feeling grief. Those with strong ties in the Middle East are finding the war between Israel and Hamas affects their reflections as they worship. Radio Boston marked the end of Ramadan earlier this month with a conversation with local Muslims. And today we share a recent conversation between my colleague Tiziana Deering and four members of our local Jewish community. You'll hear from Daniel Osborne, a history educator, researcher, and nonprofit professional. Rabbi Orr Rose, director at the Miller Center for Interreligious Learning and Leadership at Hebrew College. And Rabbi Leora Abelson, rabbi at the Nehar Shalom Community Synagogue in Jamaica Plain. And Amanda Luckner, fourth year at UMass Amherst. Tiziana Deering began by asking our guests how they're feeling during this year's Passover, and Daniel Osborne answered first.
You know, I'm really conflicted this year. It's been an incredibly challenging 6 months, and Passover for me has historically been an opportunity to be in community, to invite people to my home for my Seder, where we do things in a way that's a little unorthodox, unconventional. And one thing that I've really been reflecting on this year is just who is not at the table? Who is not sitting with me? Who is it that is retreating away from communal spaces because the world feels broken right now? Because we feel as though we are not sitting together as a community who is seeing the world in a manner where we all feel as though there's consensus or there's mutual understanding. And that's been one of the sad realities these past few months, at a time where also I've become a new father and I'm introducing my son into these joyous moments where we prepare meals, we celebrate together, and we reflect on our values and how we see ourselves as striving to live up to those values in our daily deeds. So there's a lot of ambivalence these days.
Who else? Go ahead, Rabbi Leo.
Yeah, I share the grief you mentioned and the just painfulness and uncertainty you're describing, Dan. For me, Passover is what our tradition calls Zman Chirutenu, the time of our freedom. It is a very powerful reflection on the idea of freedom, and the Hasidic tradition teaches that Yetziat Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt, is always happening. So the Haggadah, which is the book that is the story of Passover that we read at the Seder, says, "Behold, dor v'dor chayav adam lerot et atzmo, ki'ilu hu yatzah mi'Mitzrayim." In every generation, a person is obligated to see themselves as if they went out from Mitzrayim, as if they made that movement from bondage into freedom, into liberation. And we are invited to understand how to reflect on how the movement from oppression into liberation is happening in our generation, and to write that story anew, to let the story of our ancestors getting free inspire us to get ourselves free or work in partnership to support other people's freedom. And Passover there has always been oppression happening in the world. When Jews have celebrated, as long as Jews have celebrated Passover, there's been oppression in the world. And this year, the themes of the story are so resonant and they're so raw. So to tell a story of Jewish freedom in a year when Jews were taken hostage and are still being held hostage and used as a weapon of war is crushing. And to tell a story that asks us to cultivate radical empathy and universal empathy, and to say, let all who are hungry come and eat, which is a central part of what we do at the Seder, to say that when tens of thousands of Palestinians are being starved to death at the hands of the Jewish state, is crushing. And this ritual invites us to wrestle with all of that and to commit to working to change the world that we live in.
Amanda, you are a next generation. Is there anything in what we've heard from Dan, what we heard from Rabbi Liora, that really resonates with you or is consistent with your experiences? You're, you know, observing Passover or experiencing Passover this year.
Yeah, I think a couple of things really resonated with me. I think first, Rabbi Liora, what you were talking about with liberation, I'm thinking about like the Jews being held hostage in a time, and like I feel like I have grown up in a time where I haven't felt a lot. I've been so lucky to not feel anti-Semitism or a lot of Jewish oppression in my lifetime, and to see it in real time play out with Jews being held hostage is like something I feel like I've only heard about in history books or from my grandparents' generation or something like that. But and at the same time to see, like you said, tens of thousands of Palestinians dying is another form of like liberation that we should be fighting for. And that is in my head at the same time at the Seder. I just had a Seder with my roommate this year. I didn't end up going into like a larger community space. And she brought in a Haggadah that I'd never, you guys may be familiar with the person who wrote this Haggadah, because it's a rabbi. But it was a lot about the idea of connection to land, the idea that people who, if you're going to live on a land, you have to respect the land itself, as well as everyone who's ever lived on it and everyone who's ever going to live on it. Mm-hmm. And I think I've never really thought about Passover in that way before. And I think this year is shedding a lot of light on that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I also think when there is a lot of conflict, there's a tendency to retreat from community spaces into more individual spaces or to just groups of one or two people where you feel the most comfortable. And I think I've definitely felt that myself, and I didn't realize I was feeling it. I guess I wasn't consciously avoiding that, but maybe that's a decision I did end up making, was like, oh, I'm just going to have a Seder with one person.
Rabbi Orr, I'll come to you in just a moment, but let me remind everyone, this is an intensely religious time of year for Jews and Muslims. We spoke with members of our Muslim community at the end of Ramadan, now during Passover. We're speaking with neighbors in our Jewish community. We have Dan Osborne, Rabbi Liora Abelson. We just heard from Amanda Luckner, who's a student at UMass Amherst. And now let's add you to the conversation, Rabbi Orr Rose.
Thank you very much. It is poignant, I think, that there are five of us children, to use the language of the Passover Seder, at this virtual Seder table, because much of the Passover Seder, in fact, as your listeners may know, is choreographed around the number four. And that includes the archetypal four children at the Seder. The Seder is designed as an intergenerational pedagogic exercise, which is embodied through food and song and ritual. And it's based on four promises from the book of Exodus of redemption. But the discerning reader will soon learn that there is a fifth expression of redemption in that sixth chapter of Exodus. And a colleague of mine, Rabbi Aaron Brusso, put it as follows, and I think it's powerful to listen carefully to his words. Who is the fifth child? She is the one that tries to hold complexity. The child who opens her mouth and nothing comes out because the cry of love for her people's suffering is stuck, wedged in her throat against the cry of empathy for the suffering of others. And so much of my attention this year has been both metaphorically, but also quite literally, on the plight of the fifth child. Because as Liora said before, and to quote another colleague of ours, Rabbi Shai Held, we need in this moment a revolution in empathy. We are dealing with two utterly traumatized peoples in the Israelis and the Palestinians, and there is so much grief and anger that it's so difficult to hold space for the pain and suffering of others. But there is going to have to be a day after. This long entrenched battle is only going to be resolved when peoples from both communities can see each other and hear each other and listen deeply with resilience and empathy so that we can move into a new and different stage of liberation for both peoples.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you said regarding creating those spaces. And I want to connect that back to what Amanda was saying about the need for, but also the trepidation around inviting people to come together because of a concern that there might be argument, there might be discord rather than discourse. I think one of the things that I'm really striving to embody and bring into my work and my life is the spirit of sitting with those who might be deemed the other, but who are themselves fully human, and to be able to ask questions and listen attentively in such a way that I'm able in these spaces to really kind of immerse myself in the humanity that too often in moments of trauma or war or conflict are erased or unseen.
Amanda, as a student, do you feel like you're given an environment that gives you a chance to explore discourse over discord?
Yeah, I do. I think honestly, just by existing on I go to UMass Amherst, there's 30,000 people here. Like there's people from all walks of life. And I think just existing in that environment is itself an opportunity to be presented with views that are not necessarily my own or haven't historically been my own, and not only like get to engage with those views, but have to.
I just keep thinking about how the idea, like you were saying, or the idea of the Passover Seder is it's a pedagogical spiritual technology for bringing together people who are different to be in deep conversation and also to not leave it at conversation. So yes, creating spaces where we can come together across differences is absolutely essential and an end in and of itself, and it's not enough. And the Seder leads us that way. So I'm thinking about that passage where it says, let all who are hungry come and eat. Let all who are in need come join us at this table. This year we are enslaved, next year may we be free, which to me says bringing people from the outside of our home to the inside, and home not just as our physical home, but as our communal spaces, the places where we're used to being comfortable, bringing in people who are hungry, who are in need, reaching out across those divides, that's how we get from this year we are enslaved to next year we will be free. So it's not just about having deep conversation with each other, it's also about then how that can move into action in the world. I know for me, working with people of many faith traditions in organizing and advocating for a ceasefire has been a really powerful part of the past several months for me, and specifically coming together over ritual meals. So being invited into a mosque for an iftar during Ramadan in order to really connect with people who I have not connected with before, and with a common cause towards working for justice, working for peace, working for safety for everyone in our community and in Israel and in Palestine.
Rabbi Orr,
I just want to pick up on that thread. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And it is also the case that we have to take to the streets and act for justice. But in doing so, we also have to reserve space for humility.
Yeah.
Because if we lose that, then we engage in idolatry. Mm-hmm. When we think that we have hold the absolute truth and we can no longer see or hear or learn from those that oppose us, then we're engaging in the antithesis of what the Passover Seder is supposed to lead to, which is devotion to covenantal relationship with the one God of all life. And of course, in this moment, I'm reminded of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's powerful message from the Birmingham jail, where he put his body on the line, in which he said, all life is interrelated. We are a single garment. There is one destiny, and I cannot be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And that will involve protest and dissent. Those are the hallmarks of a healthy democracy. But it can't devolve into harassment, into threat. There is a difference between righteous indignation and self-righteousness. And the line is very thin.
As we seek to close here, I wonder if I could ask the four of you, and you may not all have an answer, and that's fine. But I wonder in the prayers that are available, and I'm just using layperson's terms here, in the prayers that are available in the Passover tradition, is there a particular one that you seek or turn to this year?
So I was speaking to Rabbi Lior before we started this conversation on air, and it's not a prayer, but I recently had the opportunity to attend a Kabbalat Shabbat evening at a local synagogue in Brookline, and there was an Iraqi Jewish musician, a Mizrahi Jewish artist, who was singing and leading the congregation that night. And he performed the song, Zaman HaSalam, A Time of Peace. And to hear the sound of Arabic reverberating throughout that prayer space while I was cradling my son, while I was thinking about where we are in the world today, while the music itself is not sufficient to change the world in the way that it needs to be changed, I felt a sense of hope. I felt a sense of joy. I felt a sense of comfort.
Rabbi Orr, Rabbi Liora, anything else either of you wants to share before we finish?
I'm thinking of Exodus 22:21, which in many ways is the watchword of this holiday. And the sentiment is repeated throughout the Torah. Do not mistreat or oppress the stranger or the foreigner, for you are strangers or foreigners in the land of Egypt. We are called across generations to remain empathic. And that means the stranger within and the stranger without. So we need to think carefully about how to continue to listen, to argue with, to protest against those within and beyond our communities, and at the same time, treat every single person with dignity, because as we learn in the book of Genesis, each and every human being is created in the image of the divine.
Amen. I'll add, on the first day of Passover, we say Tefillat Tal, a prayer for dew. And half a year ago, on October 7th, on Shmini Atzeret, we said a prayer for rain as we began the rainy season. And rain is a symbol of abundant blessing. And dew is less obvious a symbol for blessing than rain. It's less powerful. It is ephemeral. It comes and goes. It's harder to see. And it is enough to nourish growth during this part of the year. And I am praying for the dew of people meeting each other, working with each other, healing their own trauma, being healed. I am praying for Palestinians in Gaza to be fed and Palestinians in the West Bank to be safe. I am praying for Israelis to be safe and to feel safe and for a time where all can be safe and free.
That was Rabbi Liora Abelson of the Nahar Shalom Community Synagogue in Jamaica Plain. Daniel Osborne, a history educator and the host of Joy in Conversation, a podcast about Jewish history and culture. He also founded Project Mosaics, which focuses on teaching about global Jewish diversity. Rabbi Or Rose, director at the Miller Center for Interreligious Learning and Leadership at Hebrew College, and Amanda Luckner, fourth year at UMass Amherst.